Welcome to What Should I Do With My Life? Figuring it out from those who seem to have it all figured out. I'm your host, Stephanie Horowitz. When's the last time you stopped and asked yourself, what am I doing with my life? Why am I doing this? Do I even like this? Join me as we hear the inspiring stories of real people to find out what they did and are doing with their lives. Are they satisfied? Would they have done anything differently? Maybe through these stories, we will figure out how to bring more meaning and passion in our day-to-day. Hi, all. Welcome to the show. Well, this was a treat, pun intended. You'll see why. I'm super excited to introduce you to today's guest, Liat Gentelli. I am fangirling hard over this one. Liat is a serious boss and role model. We have a lot to learn from her. She's a lawyer turned self-taught cake lady, two-time entrepreneur, mother of three, and oh so much more. In this episode, she shares about her former life in the legal world and how making cakes for her kids' birthdays ultimately became the foundation for running the two cake businesses she created, Caked and Baked and Baker Street Tel Aviv. We talk about the unique elements of her identity and different experiences that have shaped her. She gives words of wisdom for those getting back in the professional world or making a career shift. There are so many nuggets of wisdom in this episode. You're going to love it. You're going to love her. So here is Liat.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
You look great. I'm good. Did you survive your crazy week?
No, and it's just.
Is it still going?
Yeah, for the foreseeable future. So I'm here with three kids, two businesses.
Yeah, you're running two businesses and you have three kids and they're trying to learn.
And so luckily today, my middle one went back to school. So my little one's been at GAN. The middle one's gone back to school today and I've got my big one at home with me.
Oh my God, you deserve a medal and you deserve everything. Liat, I'm really, really excited to have you joining me.
Excited to be here. It's a nice way to start the Sunday morning before I face the world.
Oh my God. Well, this is amazing. So thank you for sharing your holy, holy time. In one sentence, can you please share what it is that you do?
I make pretty cakes.
You make pretty cakes.
I make pretty cakes. That's it in one sentence.
That's a really solid sentence. I can't wait to unpack this because ladies and gentlemen and everyone listening, she does so much. So I'm just curious for the background. Growing up, were you aspiring to be a baker, a cake maker?
Never. If anyone told me when I was a kid that I would be a cake maker, I would have laughed in your face and be like, no, it was in the cards, I was either going to be a journalist. I wanted to be an investigative journalist or a lawyer. Like basically, they were my goals in life. They were the two jobs that I said I was going to do. Ever since I was very young, it was like in my head that was what I was going to be. I went down the legal route in the end. I think I would have made a good journalist. My parents pushed me down the legal route. And then Ally McBeal came about and I thought, yes, this is what I want in life. I followed and I became a lawyer in London, solicitor, and I worked in the city and I hated it. I take that back. I loved studying it. Mm-hmm. Loved. I thought it was the most interesting thing to learn. I think it's so relevant. I think it's so, like, it's so dynamic and it's so, you can debate it for hours and hours. It's endless debate and I love that aspect of it. By the time I went to law school, I kind of realized, hang on, there's a lot of paperwork involved in this. I'm not discussing the merits and the legal system, the rights and wrongs of the world. I'm helping someone to buy a house and fill in a form. Like I got really kind of disillusioned by the reality of it. I started working in the city. I'd have to say I felt a bit drowned, as in suffocated, as in I couldn't be me. I used to get comments in the office like, oh, you're a bit colourful, because I would, you know, like, you think about London and textbook of like everyone's in grey and it's a grey city and you're serious. Uh-huh. And I would rock in like wearing a suit and like a bright pink shirt underneath, and it was kind of like, oh, you're a bit different here. Uh-huh. But that who I was, and I felt like I couldn't be myself. And I've always been creative, like always. Not through cake, but like I was always creative. You'd always find me making my own clothes, like DIYing bits and decorating. I was always doing something. And I felt that in law, it was something that I couldn't express that part of me. It was very much like gone.
Yeah, you didn't really have room for a creative outlet. What kind of law were you practicing, and how long were you working as a lawyer?
Employment.
Law.
Yeah, employment, which is so boring. Like, think of like the most boring of boring. No, it was really boring, and I became a bit. I was on the side of like the big employees, and they would have members of staff who had been on sick leave for like 5 years and still getting paid. And I didn't like, it felt dirty. It was just like me saying, I'm not going to pay you anymore. And like telling people you're faking this illness. Like, I don't know. It had gone. All those like huge ambitions that I loved, you know, when I was studying law and I'm doing, especially public international law, which I loved. I was like, I'm going to work in the UN. Like, I had these like big dreams of making a difference in the world. And the reality is, to get down those roads, I'd have to work hard and not earn a lot of money at some point, and then like weasel my way. Like, it was just really, really, really hard, and something I didn't want to do at the time. I kind of stopped. I quit because I was really disgruntled.
Well, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I got
passed over for a promotion with my colleague who we sat in the same office, and we both got round to the final stage, and he was like this young guy, nice guy. He wasn't better than I was at the job. And we both got through to his final interview. He comes out and he tells me that his final interview, they spoke about football and their football teams that they supported. And I was like, oh, he goes, yeah, it was just more like a chat. And right. So I went in and I had a grilling about business and who was the CEO of this. And if you were in this situation, and they put all this stuff on me. And I came out, I was like, hang on, you had a chat and I got a grilling and made to feel awful. And they put me like in a really horrible scenarios, which there was no right or wrong to. And then he got the job. So yeah, I was very, very, very disgruntled. And so I quit. And then,
yeah,
well, and I had no fight left. I didn't.
It's funny because whenever I hear about career pivots, and obviously people in many different careers pivot, I feel like it's so common that it's a lawyer or someone who's like, I'm a miserable lawyer, and they're looking to make a pivot. So what do you think that's about? How come it's so prevalent in this lawyer world? I mean, I know it's everywhere.
Lawyers, I think, well, one, there's a million of us, right? There's like so many lawyers in the world, who needs another one? Secondly, like I said before, I think studying the law is so much more interesting than actually practicing it. If I could be an academic and I could afford to, I would still be studying it. I would sit and have debates with all my tutors all day long and learn and love. I really genuinely love the law and the idea of the law and debate. Like, that to me is just amazing. But in the reality, it's such a, the world of the legal world is like harsh, especially if you're working in like big financial centers such as London, and I'm sure like in America it would be like New York, and there's so much pressure, there's so much competition. I've heard of, you know, you're working super long days, and there are some days you're just sitting there to not be the last not to be the first person to leave, even though you've got nothing to do, because it's giving that appearance that you're important. And it was just all a farce. If you are, I would say brave, if you're brave enough to kind of make that decision. I'm not saying that I was brave enough. Life kind of had other plans for me, and so I went with it. But when you make those, you kind of think, actually, I want to be happy, and this isn't happy. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't making me happy. So the money is great, but the actual lifestyle and the job itself wasn't making me happy. And I'm not selfless enough to say that I would be a like pro bono criminal lawyer and work for tuppence, because I didn't study my ass off forever to earn money. So
yeah,
and that's the reality.
Definitely.
I quit my law job and I actually went to New York for 3 weeks to have time by myself. So I was there, then I came back, I had my long-term boyfriend, and then a month later I found out I was pregnant. So I'm 24 going on 25. And I have like a mild panic attack about this idea. And I turn around and I said to him, we're moving to Israel to have a baby. That was it. People ask me the reason, I can't. That was my rationale. That was it.
So then, moving to Israel was never like part of the life plan?
It had been back and forth. My dad's Israeli. So mm-hmm. it had always been. And a few years prior, I'd actually been offered a job in a law firm here. And I love the idea of working in a law firm here. They're so casual. The woman who interviewed me wore flip-flops and leggings. And she was like her partner. And I was like, this is amazing.
Classic example.
But I actually moved back to London for my boyfriend. I didn't. I was like, I was in love. Still am. He's my husband now. So I freaked out. And I said, that's it. I don't want to have a baby in England. I think it was like none of my peers. I was young compared to like everyone around me. And I didn't know what to do. And I said, we're moving to Israel. Within 6 weeks, we were here.
Oh my God. So you moved to Israel. Did you have family here? Because
my dad's here.
So your dad's from, oh, so was he here at the time that you moved here?
My dad's here. My husband's family, he's also half Israeli. So he's got one of his sisters is here. So Israel's always been a second home to me. I'd been back and forth so much as a kid. I would used to come like 4 or 5 times a year. So it was always a second home. And that was it. I decided that I had to move here. And I did.
When did you decide to open up a cake making business?
I never did.
How did this happen? You never decided to open this business?
Like I said, life has other plans for me. So we moved here. I wasn't working. I was pregnant. I couldn't obviously get a job. I'm like, no one's going to employ me right now. Had baby number one, then had baby number two. When baby number two was about a year old, I was like, yeah, I need to get a job. So I stayed at home. They're both at home with me, which is a luxury in Israel. And then I got offered a job working from home, flexible hours for an import-export agriculture company. That are based in Israel and I could work from home. My clients were in the UK and everything was online. And I was like an assistant and doing logistics and like kind of like back end sales and everything, but it was all online. It allowed me to be with the kids and everything else. So what happened was as my kids were getting older and every birthday, I for some reason got it in my head, I had to make them a cake. I grew up with my mum the night before making me cakes, which in my eyes were like the best thing ever. The next day to wake up in the morning and see the cake my mum made me was like, the biggest memory. So I had to make my kids cakes in my head. I was like, yeah, I got to make them a big cake. They were awful, like really, really bad. I'd never made a designed cake in my life. And this is like 10-11 years ago now. This is way before Instagram came along. This is when YouTube tutorials were still kind of like a beginning thing. So I kind of taught myself. I didn't know any of the language in Hebrew for like cake stuff that I needed or where to buy. And supermarkets here are very different to what it's like in the UK or in the US. Like I could go to a supermarket and find everything I need. Here, I have to go to about 10 different stores to find.
Obviously.
And so I started making cakes. And as time went on, they got a bit better. And friends started asking me, like, oh, my kid really loved the cake. Can you help me make a cake? And then, can you help me make a cake? Can you just make it for me? I'll pay you for this. Okay. And it kind of just grew. And all the time I'm working at this other job. But then it became like people are asking me to help them make their cakes and to make their cakes. And so I started taking it on. And then it became a friend for friend and a friend and a friend. Like, and I was in complete denial. I was still working another job, like full time with 2 kids at home and everything else. And there was always a cake in the oven in the background. And I would like be typing away and a beeping. And it just kind of grew. That's it. That was it. I didn't decide. It just happened. And so I think it was when my littlest, so my third, when she was born, then I realized that I had people asking for me for cakes and I was having to say, oh no, I'm having a baby right now. So I was like, oh, I actually have a business. And I kind of admitted I actually have another business. People want me and I'm not available and they're disappointed. And so when I then decided, it's like, right, I'm gonna go for it. So like 5 years ago, I said, okay, I'm giving myself like a proper name and here's my Facebook page and Instagram and I'm Caked and Baked and I'm back from having kid and I'm going to start taking orders again. And that was it. Like, and I was still working this other job. So I launched Caked and Baked as a proper thing. I kind of like admitted that I became the cake.
Secrets out. You were like, secrets, yeah, out. I guess.
I'm the cake lady. That's me. And I was still working. And then I think I gave it another year and my cake orders were just getting ridiculous. And I was staying up it was, I would go to bed every night like 2 in the morning because I feel like with the kids picking them up, with the baby was at home with me the whole time, I would literally be computer baby like this, kicking me overnight. And there was this baby on me. I made them like an African scarf and she wrapped on my back whilst I was in the kitchen. Like I just kind of just plodded along and I was like, this is ridiculous. What am I doing? So my husband was like, quit the other job. You've got a business. You've got a viable business. You are in demand the whole time. Quit it. Quit, quit, quit. I finally plucked up the courage and I quit my other job and I became a full-time cake lady.
Oh my God. I have so many questions. You just said so much. Do you even realize everything you've done and how crazy and amazing this is?
I stop for a minute and I go, hey, crap, I actually found that a lot. Like, what was I doing? Why did no one stop me?
What were some of the thoughts going through your head when you were contemplating quitting a steady job to start your own venture? And also, how did you know what to do? You had never started your own business before. How did you know how to start this business?
The quitting my job thing was a big step for me. My husband must have been telling me for about a year to do it. The idea of not having that financial income, like steady income that I knew was coming in all the time, it was so scary for me. Life here is super expensive. And I've got 3 kids. And I live in the center of the city because I refuse to move out to the suburbs. So I'm paying an extortion amount of rent. And it was really scary. But when I worked out that what I was earning in cake was sometimes overtaking what my basic salary was earning, and I was earning quite well, I was like, well, okay, you've covered that now. Now, if you quit and you've got more time during the day, you can only do more. And I had a continuous business and I really had to like stop and go, listen, you have a continuous business, you're in demand, you have like a month waiting list kind of thing. You can do it. What is the worst case scenario? Worst case scenario, it doesn't work and I go find another job. This was the big point as well, was that you kind of, I doubted myself for so long. I think this is common for women and especially women who have made a career change or like stop to have kids and then finding their way back again, is that you start doubting yourself and your abilities and your intelligence and your capabilities of getting another job. And it was like, I've been in this job, which has been a cushy job for however long. I've worked from home. I've not seen the outside world for a long time. So what would it be like to go back out into the workforce? Yeah. So I think women in general, so we start doubting ourselves. And I was like, hang on a second. I'm a lawyer. I'm clever, right? My CV speaks for itself, like my school records, my university, my law school. There's no reason why I cannot and go get another job if this goes wrong. And I think it's the fear when we think about starting a business for ourselves, there's fear is a major hindrance to us. It holds us back massively. You know, I had 2 businesses that I was working and had which allowed me to build up my cake business to the point. I don't think I could have done it starting from FS, like starting from zero to build up building up my clientele, because then I really wouldn't have income. At this point though, I'd been working. So I had my steady income, but I had the cake business, which I'd built up over the years that gave me that I was like, okay, I have another income, which is just as much as my steady one. So it can only be more if I push it. Worst case scenario, I get another job if it doesn't work out. And it was when I had psyched myself up and I was like, that's it. That's all it is. That is the worst case. I went for it. Starting up a business can be a bit complicated, especially like in bureaucracy, and it's like a different country and it's not your native speaking and it's so intimidating. I just basically took on a really good accountant who I just go, yes, okay. And he explains stuff to me and I'm like, I don't know.
I trust you. I trust you.
Yeah. Like I do. I was just, because I couldn't have done it without him. And that's it. It's actually quite simple. You just have to find out like your rules and regulations.
Well, it's a huge accomplishment. You said at first you started making cakes and they were bad. And now you make these cakes and these have gotten a lot of attention from the media, from a lot of people. I mean, they seriously are incredibly decadent, creative, amazing cake. So how do you go from like, I make crappy cakes to leading caked and baked? And there's such a high demand for these incredible looking cakes.
Practice, 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 practice. Like really, it's all it is practice. As I said, I was completely self-taught. I didn't have any courses. I wouldn't go to any of the courses here anyway, because they're all in Hebrew, so I would have found them too intimidating. But it was, and no, okay, so this is another thing, is that I found, sounds really like weird, but there's like cake fashion and cake styles from around the world. Here, and especially back then, cake at a birthday party would be served in a disposable silver tray, like a chocolate cake with some terrible chocolate sauce on, with like a really rubbish supermarket sprinkles on, and it's like, Inuga,
happy
like,
birthday,
literally. And that is just that was like, yeah, if you're like, oh my god, it's crap. And that, like, I'm sure that in the UK, I mean, the cake is such a centerpiece. In the US as well, cakes are a big deal. Australia, my mum's Brazilian. In Brazil, it's like the cake and the dessert table is huge at a party. It's such a thing. And here it kind of wasn't, like only if you were having a massive fancy do. But in England, it's like everyone. You have a proper party table and the cake. And what I wanted to do as well, which was to recreate the style, I couldn't find what it was I was looking for here. Like, it was such a different thing. And I think that I was able, so I practiced, I taught myself a lot. My poor kids suffered throughout the years of my practice. There's been a lot of dummy cakes along the way, like me trying stuff out.
You call it suffering. I would call that a dream. Are you kidding?
My cakes are literally made 90% cake. It's all butter and sugar in them. No, I'm joking.
It's delicious.
But so I, it's just practicing. It really is one of those things, you know, it would be, there's two elements. So there's the baking part, of which I've always been able to bake. Like even at school when we did baking, my cakes came out amazing. My mum loved my cake. So the baking part was okay. It was like the making them look aesthetically how I wanted them to look. That's just practice and learning techniques and having the right tools and equipment, which were hard to find. So every time I'd go back to London, I would like stuff my suitcase with bits that I needed, and I developed my own style from it. And I think that's what every kind of, it sounds so, I'm talking about cake, but every cake artist would have, has their own style in the way they make their own cakes. And so I was able to build my own style, which, and I serve, like I began by serving mainly the fellow Olim community. So it was the people who were looking for the type of cake that they would expect to get back at home. So I was able to reach out to the fellow Anglos and the Americans, and it was something that they were familiar with. Whereas Israelis were kind of like, what is this? Are you crazy? You're like, who has this at a birthday party? But now the Israelis are completely on it, thanks to Instagram.
You started the trend here in Israel, basically. You started this cake fashion trend.
There are other cake makers as well. There were, and I found, and I discovered, well, like say for example, when Instagram became more of a thing, I was able to find some other, and there's some really talented Israeli cake makers as well.
Oh my god, I have so many questions for you. How could we talk for 10 hours today? I'm just kidding. So it really started with word of mouth, you would say, yeah, and then once social media became a thing and you were branding yourself and marketing yourself, things really took off. Yeah. When did it become a passion? Because at first it was kind of something you did for your kids, and you said you always needed like a creative outlet. So I imagine you enjoyed it, but when was this something like, oh, I really, really enjoy this. This is a passion versus work, or where does it stand now even?
I actually don't know. Like I have to say, so in the past few weeks, I'm going to blame it on Corona. I feel like I kind of lost my mojo. I think it's because of the type, you know, I'm making like smaller sized cakes and different sized things that I would normally be able to be so creative and come up with myself at the moment. I feel that I'm kind of like, I'm missing that lack of, like I've done something amazing. I'm making kind of, oh yeah, it's a pretty cake. It's nice. It's a pretty cake. But I'm at the moment feeling a bit in a bit of a rut because I haven't been able to make something that I really go like, it's like, wow, like an amazing cake. And I'm going to blame Corona on that.
We can always blame Corona, but also I imagine just because you're doing that every day, you might kind of get jaded at how amazing these creations are.
But I think also because before, let's say, what I do is all cakes are customized. Like they're saying, I'm doing like crazy stuff, like a cake that looks like a steak, a big three-tier Lion King cake, or, you know, all these different things. And all of a sudden now I'm making these like tiny buttercream cakes, but there's nothing that amazing going on them. And no, I say not, they look gorgeous. They're pretty. they're nice, lovely cakes. But then I'm not doing that. I'm not sitting there going, I love the problem. Somebody gives me something. I'm going, how can I make this look like great in cake? And I'm missing that kind of element from the whole process at the moment. Mm-hmm. It will pass. And I've got a few exciting products coming up, which is great.
Yeah, I feel like you have everything going on right now. And in addition to founding Caked and Bake, which is really where you would personalize cakes, customize, you also recently, I believe, started Baker Street Tel Aviv. So can you share about what that is and what you're doing?
Okay. Yeah, I'm crazy who decided to open another business in the middle of Corona. So Baker Street Tel Aviv is a baking studio, which is purpose-built for teaching cake decorating and baking workshops. One of the things that I was missing during my whole business here was this cake decorating workshop. And I've seen them in the UK, in the US, and I follow some amazing people online, but that here I didn't have anything to go to. And cake making is actually quite a solitary job. You spend, most cake makers work by themselves. They spend all day literally by themselves, even mm-hmm. listening to the radio, watching TV whilst they work their asses off making cake. So the idea that you connect kind of with other cakers, because it's really nice to discuss ideas and techniques and to share and exchange, but you hardly ever have the opportunity to be together. Mm-hmm. So the idea, we kind of wanted to create this community where you can come, you can make cakes, and it's a casual, it's not like a patisserie school. It's normal people. So you could be somebody who wants to learn how to make better cakes just so that they can make nice cakes for their own family, like whenever they have occasion. Or you could be an experienced baker who just wants to perfect their skills from people who've learned tips, tricks, secrets from people who've been doing it for a very long time. And so we've created this workshop space, and it's purpose-built, and it was our baby. I say our because I have a partner, which I'll talk about in a moment. We have created this space, and you join these workshops, and we have so many different things going on. And we also every now and then have guest tutors coming in. We have a weekly teen baking class, which is really fun. We've got some young teens who are like really great at baking. A couple of times a month, we have like a kids class as well. And then we have date nights. We have like so much going on. It's just a really fun kind of activity to be able to do with your friends. You can do it on your own. We do hen parties as well and private events, which is just great. And I had this vision of doing something. So how it came about was, so it must be like nearly 2 years ago, there was this, it came up on those targeted ads on Facebook of Georgia Green is coming to Israel and she's doing a cake workshop in this patisserie school. And I was like, oh, she's English. And she's like from where I'm from, I think. And I'd seen her on Facebook and Instagram. And I was like, do you know what? I'm going to go. I've never been to a cake class before. And this is only like 2 years ago. I just want to go to see what a class is actually about. And she's English, so it's going to be in English. And I'm going to go. Kind of like connected straight away, me and Georgia at the workshop. And we kind of kept in touch a little bit afterwards, and she went back to London. And then it must have been like a year later or 6 months, I've lost my timeline. She's like messaged me on Instagram and she was asking me about a kitchen space because she was coming to Israel. And we arranged to meet up and we're having a coffee. And I basically turned around and said, I'm looking for an outside kitchen space because I want to get a bigger studio so that I can teach as well. And she was like, that's my dream. Like, she's to move to Israel and to open up studios. We're like, come on, let's do it together. So she was in the process of making Aliyah. And I was here trying to find spaces and open up our business. And then Georgia arrived the same week of our first lockdown, our March.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, poor thing. So she arrived right back, like smack bang, just before we entered lockdown. And so we faced all this thing, like, and it was annoying because we were already in the process of like looking for spaces, and it was then Corona came and messed with us all. And then when we came, what was it, like summer, when we were free again, we were like back on it. We're like, we've got to find a place. We're going to do this. It's over. It's perfect timing. And then we found that amazing place. And we're like, this is it. We weren't quite prepared for it, but we're like, do you know what? Let's just go for it. It's now or never. let's go for it. So we spent like 2 months decorating, like we built building, like perhaps built like island, this huge island in the middle. And then we were able to open for like 3 weeks before the second lockdown, just to suck it to us. We've like, we did like other things along the way. We had like DIY kits and mini kits, and like we were doing things to keep ourselves going in the time being.
That is so crazy and amazing and gutsy. I know that you will continue to succeed, and I see everything that you both are doing. And I know that this thing's going to end, and I'm really excited to come to a workshop. And oh my God, I feel like honestly, you're like a superhero. You can literally do anything. Really? I mean, opening up, you have two businesses, you're a mother of three children. There also really, there's so many different aspects of your identity. You're a new immigrant to this country. We just said you're a mother to three children. You're a woman of color. You're a Jewish woman. You're a killer entrepreneur. This is a crazy, crazy mix. You have a really unique perspective. And I'm wondering, you're a boss, like no words, seriously, no words. I'm curious, how do you feel like these different parts of your identity have shaped you and your career journey?
So this has come up a lot recently. And I have to say that, you know, I speak, the only person who can share with me the closest is my brother, because we have shared a lot of the same experiences in this front. So like, when we talk about my identity, I feel like as growing up, we struggled. It's kind of like we never belonged anywhere. So my dad's Israeli, my mum's Brazilian, but we were born and raised in London. With no family. Like, I don't have a single soul in London or family. It was just me, my mom, my brother, and my dad. But my dad traveled with work, so he was always abroad. So it was literally me, my mom, my brother, and my dad when he would backwards and forwards. And we are Black and we are Jewish. And we never really fit in anywhere. Like, anywhere. So within the Jewish community, we really struggled. My mom converted a million and one times and in a million and one different ways. She's the most converted person that could ever. she wanted us to never have any problems proving our Jewishness.
Yes.
So she did every step possible. So she's done like through every level, and she did it in England twice and she did it in Israel. Oh, so that it can never be challenged that we weren't. Okay. Yeah. So, but for example, and I lived in a very Jewish area.
Mm-hmm.
It was a nice area. And, you know, we had like our mezuzahs on the door. And, you know, I would have the Jewish charities would come knock on the doors of like the houses of the mezuzot. And if I remember this time, I opened the door and these two women looked at me. I went, oh, and then they said, can we speak to the owners of the house, please?
Oh, God.
And then I just went, mom. And then
oh, my God.
Hey, Jaws, like, dropped to the floor, and they didn't know what to do. Like they actually just couldn't hide their shock and like from us. And it was ridiculous, but quite funny at the same time. Like,
oh my God.
You know, I used to get stopped. My dad on a Saturday morning would go to synagogue before me. My brother would like trail behind an hour later. And we used to get stopped by security, and they used to be like, what are you doing here? This is a Jewish synagogue. And we used to be like, oh no, I come here all the time. And they actually would make us go in and point out my dad, and my dad had to vouch for us. And this is like, we were the only Black Jewish family that went to the synagogue. Mm-hmm. If you have not recognized me since I was a kid coming here, and to the point that I'm a teenager and you're still stopping me, like, come on, do me a favor.
Yeah.
That's just you failing to acknowledge even my existence. Like, I'm part of this community. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know, I always was one step out. My brother played Jewish League football, so he kind of had like more closer connections, but I never did. But then on the other hand, my mum's Brazilian. And a lot of people fail to realize that Brazil has the largest Black population outside of Africa. Mm-hmm. Because everyone just sees, they just think of like a Latina looking lady with like long hair and a big round ass. And they're like, oh, that's a Brazilian. Little do they ever acknowledge the fact that we're actually all Black. So people be like, well, you're not really Brazilian. And I'm like, yeah, I am. They're like, but you're Black. And I would be like, yeah. I don't know where I'm even going with this. My slave ship stopped off like somewhere different to yours. Like, what are you talking? So I would suffer in England. So I suffered from the both the black community and the white people. Like, so I wasn't white enough for white people and I wasn't black enough for black people. So that was something I kind of like, you just never really belonged anywhere. And then coming to Israel, it just takes it to a whole different level. Like completely. When I first made Aliyah, I used to get followed around shops and people would, I remember being in one shop in Dizengoff Center and I picked up a dress, had a wedding to go to. And I picked up this dress, the shop owner literally came and took it out of my hand and said, it's very expensive. Ugh. And I was like, what made you think I can't pay for it? Or I used to get asked how much I charge for cleaning an hour. What makes you think there was no reason for anyone to approach me in the street to ask me if I'm a cleaner, apart from you just looked at me and assumed. And even when I made Aliyah, I was in Misrad Apnim. And so I'm like, when I made Aliyah, I'm like a returning citizen because my dad's Israeli. I already had an ID number. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to explain this to the woman and she didn't listen to me. And she sent me, she goes, you need to go here, and sent me to this other room. So I'm sitting, and I'm pregnant at the time, and I'm sitting in this room. And everyone around me is an immigrant. I can see whether it's Russian, Filipino, Ethiopian, everyone is in this room. And I'm looking around going, okay, I'm not sure I'm in the right place. No one is listening. I keep trying to tell someone. Then they come in and go, okay, we're closed. I've been there for like 4 hours. They're like, we're closed in the office. You have to come back tomorrow. I'm like heavily pregnant. I go up to, I'm like, my husband's with me. He's like, listen, I need to get my tell that Zuch. She goes, and this woman stopped and she actually listened. We got her to listen. She goes, why are you waiting here? You're the wrong side. You're Israeli. And I'm like, because I got sent here because someone looked at me and said, that's where you belong, instead of actually listening to me. I just feel as if like you have these experiences in life and I think they make you tougher.
Yeah. Resilient.
I'm not like, bitter. Like I don't hold a grudge. Everyone's got their own reasons. I believe the whole world, I think we all are prejudiced to an extent. We all have our, and anyone who says they're not is a liar. Like we all carry it. It's human nature. I think animals do it themselves, we do it. So I've had to endure a lot. And my mum always brought us up to be like, whatever you are, you have to be better than everyone else. Because you'll always be judged as if like you're at the bottom straight away. So whatever you do, you have to be like 110, always. And I think that's like something that's really stuck with my brother and I. So we're very kind of headstrong and defiant and we've got to like press on and it doesn't matter. And I do think those experiences, they have an effect. Sometimes you don't realize how much they have an effect. And until, for example, you know, the whole Black Lives Matter movement, not the organization, the whole movement itself brings stuff to light and it touches nerves. And it's like, and I think what touches nerves the most is when you see people's negative reactions to it. And then you're like, hang on a second. I'm not here screaming and shouting that I'm a victim the whole time. But when I tell you something, don't tell me it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And I think that really, and it makes you question everyone around you. But then again, you know, and for example, you know, the rise of anti-Semitism in Europe as well. So then I have it from that perspective. And I would say people, you know, when they make like the racist, like Jewish jokes, and there was like recently in the UK as well, some people in the music industry who I admired very much growing up are making these like really outrageous comments and being allowed to say them. And people are agreeing with them. People that I know are agreeing with them. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, oh, where do we go? So this year, you know, with Corona and all, but this year with, in terms of like identity itself, it's such like a loaded question for me because as much as I feel like I don't really belong anywhere, but I belong everywhere all at the same time. So I get really, you know, as much as I've suffered by the hands of the Jewish community or by the Black community themselves, I still suffer with them against the world itself. Like, so it's like a really, it's just like a complex issue for me, but we're like, it's loaded and like this is full of emotions and sentiments that go behind it, but it's tough. But I just feel that dialogue and conversation and explaining to people. I had one friend and he really reached out and he kind of wanted to know, because I actually just want to sit and talk to you. and wanted to hear my stories, because he was, we were talking about institutionalized racism, and he doesn't see it, and was trying to make the distinctions, but he wasn't arguing with me. He didn't see it. He wanted to understand where, how, and so that was like me like discussing, and that was nice. It was nice to have someone actually ask me.
Well, I really appreciate you sharing all of that and your honesty with it. And of course, it's extremely important. And as you said, and there's so many different unique elements to your identity. And there's so much more, obviously, than just those few things. I mean, you obviously have so much to you. And I just can tell by talking with you that you're such a generous, giving, kind person. And obviously, those are extremely important parts of our identities. So I really thank you for sharing all of that. You are a strong, strong lady. What do you think are some of your strengths?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. Sometimes I think my strengths can actually be my weakness. It's like, you know, you could say, okay, I'm really stubborn and I'm like headstrong and I'm like determined to get things done. But then you go like, to what extent? Like where there has to be balance in everything, right? So, and I think so when I can be like so determined and I want to like pursue things and make somehow create 27 hours in a day when there aren't. And something
like, God, you are God.
Like of that, along the line, something suffers. I think, you know, my strengths are that I'm headstrong. I like to get shit done, kind of. That is my motto. Like, it's like, what am I doing? And that's kind of just the way I am. I always have been. Like, that is me. It's a personality thing. It's love it or leave it. Like, love it. It's just who I am. I can say, and I think this year and the whole corona has put everything in perspective in terms of, you know, balance. I have to find, I do realize I need to find some sort of balance at the moment. And I kind of feel like, let me just keep this bakery going, because I just created it. Once that is up and running and my kids are at school and I will be able to like find my equilibrium. I just felt at the moment, because of the way the world is, I don't know if my kids are here or we're there, we're quarantined, we're not, like I've got stuff going on. It's really hard at the moment to find any sort of balance.
Yeah, it's kind of just like dealing with the challenge ahead of you. And right now, as you said, I have three kids at home, and with COVID going on, there's Zoom school, and you're also running two businesses, and there's a lot going on.
I don't know. I think when people are behind a keyboard, they forget that there's a person on the other end there. It's not like this nameless business, it's actually me. And that's partly my fault, because I don't actually put my face all over my business, and maybe I should humanize myself a bit more so people might be nicer to me. But when I really can't take on any more work, and people are like begging me, they're like, oh, but this, but that, and blah, blah. It's kind of like, yeah, but I'm a person and I have three kids who need me right now.
You really do have, you act like you have 40 hours in a day. You're on another level. I would love to know if you have any advice for someone who is working a job that they're not passionate about or thinking to make a career shift to start their own venture. What advice would you give them?
Make a list. Whether it be written or physical or like in your head, do it over a period of time. Make your like balance. What do you need? What will make you happy first? You have to identify what will. If something is making you miserable, I really, 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 truly believe that life's too short. Life's too short for this. Money comes and goes. This is my thing, okay? And I'm not saying this from a position of privilege at all. Like, money comes and goes. But think like what you can do. So I'm not saying like quit your job and find anything. Keep at your job, but at that time, hustle. Hustle hard. Whether that means you find an extra 2 hours every evening to do something else, do it. Like, find what it is, wherever it's like, do you have a hobby that you could monetize somehow? Do you have, even this, right? Take time from your day to do something you love. Because even if you're in a position in a job, but you are not in a financial position that you could leave that job, there are lots of things. I'm not going to romanticize it. Like, there are lots of things that keep us in jobs, right? And the work that we have. But make sure you take time to do something that you actually love. I mean, you never know what may be something you get, oh, this could turn into a job, or what opportunities you can make just by socializing with different people and be like, oh, I've got this position. Does that like interest you? Not everyone has to go out and create their own business to make them like that they have to have a passion about. And I think that's also a pressure we have. We're like, what am I passionate about? What should I be doing? Yeah. So we're all searching for something that actually may not exist.
Yep.
So it's just taking time out to find out what makes us happy. And if you get to that position where you are working your job, but you've got something else that's starting to make you more money and to do something else, think about, you know, when you can make that switch. Make your list, make your finances. Don't do anything like crazy. Much easier if you don't have kids hanging off of you. You need, but
it's physically hanging off of you.
Literally, like they're just horrible. And so yeah, like, but don't be afraid. Always tell yourself, what is your worst case scenario? Doesn't work out, do something else. Like that's your worst case scenario. Sometimes you just gotta have a little bit of faith.
It's really good advice. And it's really, I'm happy that you said about, we're all looking for this passion and it might not exist. We need to stop searching for that. I mean, it's really true. And especially in the name of this podcast, where it is kind of like exploring our passions. It's important to, a huge thing is so many people don't know what their passions are. And that's a big struggle. And you shouldn't be down on yourself that you don't know what your passions are. You don't know, something's wrong with me because I don't know what I love.
Yeah, exactly. There shouldn't be this thing of like, oh, but there's nothing that I really love right now and there's something wrong with me and I'm unfulfilled because of it. Mm-hmm. And I think this endless searching that we kind of have, that we've been told so long, find something that we're passionate about, then it leaves people feeling a bit empty or disappointed in themselves when they can't find it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't automatically come to them. Be kind to ourselves. Like, it's okay. It's okay.
You're right. Internalizing that. Leah, what can we expect from you in the future? Once COVID blows over, I know you're going to go full steam with Baker Street TLV. 10 years from now, we're sitting down and talking. Where are you at? What are other ambitions or things you hope to do?
10 years from now. Oh my God, I'm so old. 10 years from now.
No, you're not.
In 10 years, I will be. Okay, Baker Street will be an international success. We will be gone. It won't just be Baker Street TLV. There'll be like Baker Street London, Baker Street New York. Okay, that's going to happen because the world's going to go back to normal or you can travel. We would have expanded. We're going to have lots of our tutors coming in as well, which will give me more free time. I'll be sending my kids off to college. It'll be amazing. my vision, I had kids young. So in 10 years time, I missed out on that 20s when all my friends were like traveling and having kids. And I'm not having kids. I mean, and partying and stuff. I was having kids. I want to travel with my husband. They'll be like, so whether it be I'm traveling for work because I'll be teaching in Baker Street, London and Baker Street, New York and everywhere else.
In Baker Street, Rome and Baker Street, Paris.
Yeah. So whether it will be that or something, I will be like kind of clawing back at my travel, the freedom that I haven't had during my younger years because I was having kids and building a business. So my business will be so successful that I'll have this freedom to like go and travel and explore.
Amazing. Well, I'm confident you're going to make it happen. You've accomplished so much. So I know this is going to happen and I can't wait to see you kill it because you really are. So thank you so much for taking the time out of your 24-hour day that really has 40 hours that really doesn't. I really appreciate it. And I loved your story. Thank you so much. Hi all. There's so much I could say about Liat and her story. I love how Liat said she never intended to run a cake business or become a full-time cake lady. It just kind of happened. Life happened, and it took her along for the ride. She was just making cakes for her kids' birthdays, and then she was asked to help make cakes for friends' kids' birthdays, and it kept spiraling until she was in such high demand that she decided to start her own business. I love this. Also, importantly, when we were talking about her identity, Liat said that she feels like she doesn't belong anywhere yet belongs everywhere. That she has suffered at the hands of certain communities, but at the same time, she suffers with those communities against the world. This was really profound to me. It's really sitting with me. She is such a resilient woman with a unique perspective. I feel honored she shared her story with me. There's so much more I could say. We're going to leave it at that. I'm going to go eat some cake now. Thank you, everyone.